Welcome back to the Diary of a CFO podcast, the podcast where finance leaders share lessons, challenges, and wins that shape their careers as well as their organizations. Today, I'm so delighted to have with me Edwin Alphonse. Edwin is a financial executive with 20 years of experience in fintech, digital currencies, and technology. She specializes in startup accounting, IFRS, and US GAAP, leading financial strategy, M&A, and corporate integration. As currently the senior controller at REM, she scaled financial operations during hypergrowth. Previously, she established digital currency accounting centers at Circle, a CPA in Canada and in the US. Edwin advises startups and serves on boards and champions financial education and entrepreneurship. Welcome, Edwin.
Thank you, Asiya. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be part of your podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you. Why don't we just start with your journey? I know you're a CPA in both countries, which people don't realize how much work it is. But what else? What else brought you to where you are now in your current role?
So this is interesting. I started my career in Canada, like you said. I'm from Haiti originally, but my parents moved to Canada when I was like close to like a college age. Mm-hmm. And I went to the University of Ottawa. And from my first time on campus, I was extremely attracted into a career in accounting. At school, I joined the work-study program. Mm-hmm. And as a student in the work-study program, I was able to work in the accounting department at the university, which was a privilege because not everyone gets to see the behind of the scene of the university. So I was in the accounting department, and I was able to work with auditors. At that time, Deloitte was the auditor of the university. Mm-hmm. And through working with Deloitte and helping them get invoices in the attic of the university, I developed a passion for auditing and accounting. This is how my journey in accounting started. I joined EY right after university and worked for EY in Toronto, in Ottawa, and finally in Grand Cayman. So after 5 years at EY, I moved to the US in Boston mm-hmm. in 2011 and joined PwC. Okay. So 3 years at PwC, I joined my first startup, and that was Circle. At that time, nobody knew about Bitcoins or cryptocurrency. And it was a big risk. I remember people telling me, why are you doing this? Are you crazy? But that was okay, like, because I like challenges. And I was interested in learning more about cryptocurrencies. I was employee number 40 and the first accountant. So my first job was to get the first audit done. And it was challenging because nobody wanted to be the auditor of a cryptocurrency company at that time.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. How did you navigate just that part?
Well, interestingly, we found like a smaller firm in California that was brave enough to take us as a client. And for me, it was a journey because, you know, when you're an auditor, you don't really know like accounting and how to set up accounting systems and processes mm-hmm. in a real company. As an auditor, all you do is review the work of other people. So I was able to learn and navigate the process of setting up accounting mm-hmm. in a really, really risky company. So I did it, worked at Circle for 5 years, built a team. And when I say team, like we had people in the US, we had people in UK, in Ireland, in Hong Kong. So I was able to work with IFRS standards as well. Because Circle at that time was an Irish entity, like the parent was an Irish entity. And then after Circle, I joined two other startups in similar role where I was able to help build a team, build processes. And then finally, 4 years ago, I joined REMP. And REMP, the first accountant, build the team, build the processes.
That's impressive because I saw REMP. We saw you guys in the Super Bowl. So if you were there 4 years ago, like how big was the team? How big is the team now in the organizations? Like what are some of the things that helped you scale with REMP?
So I think I was privileged enough to work in a company that is focused on helping accountants with finance automation. So this is a great environment for me because I'm working in a company whose mission is to help accountants like me. So I use REMP to do work. I mm-hmm. use REMP to process his invoices. Mm-hmm. I use REMP for bill pay. So from the get-go, it was the perfect environment to build a team. So when I joined in 2021, we had a team of 71 people. That was the headcount in the company. Right now, we have about 1,300 employees. And being the first in accounting was great because I was able to set up the processes, work on the controls, and also establish the primary foundation of accounting and finance. So right now, my accounting team is, we have a team of 8, but we get a lot done.
With 1,300 employees, wow. And what would you say are some of the things that helped you scale, right? Because if you were the first accountant, there is no roadmap. You're probably taking something maybe that was handled by a bookkeeper before, and you're trying to bring it in-house and building procedures, you're hiring people, you helping them grow. Like, can you speak more about like that whole experience?
It is something to think about because you need to have a roadmap. And for me, my roadmap, and I would say my North Star, is daily close. I dream about just like pressing a button and closing the book. I dream about automation. So that's my North Star. Mm-hmm. And accounting as a function, we have 3 goals as accountant. The first one is to keep the lights on. People don't think about accounting like that, but throughout all the functions that we do, like AP, AR, payroll, compliance, auditing, like our first mission is to keep the lights on. And we do that by safeguarding the assets of the company. By asset, I mean like people, number one asset. Mm-hmm. If they don't get paid, they don't show up to work, they're not satisfied. So that's 2 payroll. Vendors, customers, those are relationships that are important for the company. If the vendors don't get paid, they don't provide services. They don't provide like hardware. There's no leases. There's no place for employees to congregate and work. So that's 2 AP. So you need to have like strong AP, strong payroll. And the last one is compliance. As an institution, as a corporation, the company and all the other entities under the company, the subsidiaries, they have tax compliance that need to be met because the IRS needs its money. The state needs its money. If you have like lenders, they want to make sure that they're not lending their money to some crazy management team. So they want a good financial statement. And investors who give money to the company, they want to make sure that their money is properly used. As an accounting leader, my role is to make sure that I take care of all of the stakeholders' needs. And mostly, the executive team need information. So with accounting, you provide information. So let me say it again. First one, keep the lights on and project, otherwise the company doesn't survive. Second, safeguard the assets. People, processes, tools, money, the money you receive through your fundraising. And third, give information. Always go back to these 3 missions or goals. And I build my team to always remember that they are important in the organization. And this brings me to like, how do you build a team? And these people are important. So being the first one, and I've been the first one in many situations at Circle, at Ramp, like I always make sure first I understand what's going on. I know how the processes work. I've done the work. Like I've done payroll, I've done AP, I've done bank reconciliation, even though the lowest menial task. So when I have a team member joining, I can coach them. I know what they're doing. So that was my first responsibility, learn so I can teach to others. The type of people that I usually like to hire are people that have full ownership of the work that they do. Like each one of my team member is a key member of the organization. Even if you're like an AP specialist, you pay bills. This is a key role because if the bills are not paid, the vendors are not happy. So I look for people that take pride in their work and that have a sense of ownership and accountability. Second, I want someone that can work independently. I work remotely and my team is pretty much remote. So I always tell them, I don't have time to babysit anyone.
No micromanagement.
No micromanagement. So I need to trust you. And trust means being transparent. It also means that knowing that even though you might be in California, I'm in Boston, we have different time zones, you get the work done. Like I don't care where my team member live. I don't care when the work gets done. It just needs to get done by a certain timeline. And we talk about it. And I think one of the challenges of like working remotely is you don't know what's going on in people's life. You don't know what their energy is. So I take it upon myself to be as close to them as possible. And I take the lead to share as much as I can about my personal life, what I'm going through. Because you need to establish this bond with, yes, with your remote team. You need to build that trust. And third is like coaching and mentoring. Like you might give people responsibility. You might put them in an ownership position, an accountability position. You might not micromanage them, but you need to lead them as well. And when we go to the hiring process, like we have, like I have a really extremely fully strong hiring process. All I do it is I like to ask questions, like personal questions. I want to know how self-aware my employees are. But what's important is knowing how you can learn from mistakes of the past. So one of my questions is like, is there anything you would do differently in your career or in your personal life? And you'll be surprised, the people that tell me nothing. Usually, like, they don't get the job usually. Because I always feel like there's always a lesson to learn. So if they haven't learned that lesson in like 20 years or 30 years, part of the hiring, they do a technical case as well. And usually in the case, there's always like some kind of trick.
Now I want to see the test afterwards. Email me.
Usually like, because like I would put an error in the question just to see who's going to find my error. Like if you are applying for an AP position, there will be like a situation where the company is running out of money. And as an AP person, you need to be like, oh my God, like I don't have money to pay my bills. What's going on? So that kind of like tests your cash management skills. Like if you're working as an accounting manager, usually I put a little trick, like there's an error in one of the entry. And the candidate that usually find my errors, they usually score high. And part of the process as well, we do have a panel interview because most of our employees, they work with different team members, different departments. So they need to be able to work with cross-partnership teams. They need to be able to communicate well. They need to be able to be assertive. So through interaction with the panel, we can assess the skills as well.
Wow. I love your hiring process because you really just outline the true foundation of a high performing accounting team, right? Because you want somebody who not just understand and can problem solve on their own, but they also have to be great business partner. Because at the end of the day, like you said earlier, as accountant, there is so much that you carry. And we often don't understand the importance of accounting in the office of the CFO. It's so important. You need good data, good accounting to do good FP&A and everything else. Can you speak a bit more to this?
Well, I think accounting is the foundation of everything. You need to have good numbers in order to do good projection, in order to start a good strategy, like an operating model. So if you don't have good accounting, you cannot have any. And usually accountants are behind the scenes and they think about like the past. Like when you look at a financial statement, that financial statement is a presentation of the past. Mm-hmm. Like right now, for example, we're working on 2024 audits. My auditors, all they care about is 12/31/24.
Yes, same boat.
Like balance sheet number 12/31/24, what did you have in the bank? What did you have as liabilities? What did you have as equity? And they ask a lot of questions, requests, reconciliation, and all of this. That's all they care about, like as auditors. And as accountants, we're going to start closing the book for the month of February. Mm-hmm. But February is already gone. But you need that information. Like you just said it, we run that campaign for the Super Bowl Sequan. We spent a lot of money. So I need to report how much money did we spend? And what was the impact of that expenditure on our sales numbers, on our go-to-market strategy? Because that was a big branding investment. Mm-hmm. What is the result of that? Guess who has the numbers? My team has the numbers. Accounting has the numbers. And with that number, this is what the go-to-market team, the revenue operation team, this is what they're going to use to make prediction about the future. This is what the executive are going to use to make sure that the investment in that marketing campaign bring fruition. Like they want to make sure that whatever they spend, they're going to get it in 10 times, 20 times of time. And what are they using for that is accounting. First of all, the accounting team had to make the payment.
Must have been a big check.
And I remember my team, like that was like the day of like CKO. Like we had a big like company-wide event and nobody at the computer. I was like, okay, I'm going to go with my laptop. And we had to process the payment really quickly. So we were key in processing the payment to AP, which is like an accounting functions. And then like reporting it, we had to report it, categorize it in the right GL, talk to the different marketing teams, salespeople and everything, and report on it. So we'd be like, okay, this is how much we've spent. And now to the revenue numbers that are going to come, we'll be like, oh, we spent that much. This is how much we got. So that's accounting here. So you need that foundation. If you don't have that foundation, nothing is solid. Finance cannot stay. Like the operating model, what numbers are used? The go-to-market strategies, what numbers are used? So I think accounting team, like a good accounting team, is building financial history. Like we are historians. We're like financial storyteller. And if nobody's hearing that story, if nobody's paying attention to the fact, you're not learning for the future. And you're not doing well for the future. So that's why I always feel like accounting is extremely important to an organization. And then when you look like more, like I work for startups, but all of these startups, they do have an exit plan at some point. Either they get bought up, either they go to an IPO. But at that point, what do investors look at? They look at financial statement. Because these financial statements tell them a story about the company, like a number story. I like to call it number story. But that number story is why people are investing. It's why people are like not investing or making decisions. And that's why accounting is extremely important.
Absolutely. And I love how you said it, because we often don't realize how important it is. And I think part of it is because we've seen accounting team and accounting system not set up right from the start. So the accounting team is often trying to catch up. Maybe the chart of account was not designed the right way to start with. And now it's a problem with the rest of the management team. Maybe the accounting system was not set up the right way. And then it's a problem with the right team. So since you had that experience building, being the one that built from scratch, how would you say are some of the things people should consider when they build that initial chart of account, when they build that initial process so that you can build to scale and not just have something that works maybe for the first 1-2 years of a company, but can work, like you said, for all these years to now you're on the Super Bowl, if I can say at Ramp, for example.
So that's extremely important. And like you said, the chart of account is the map. If you don't have a good chart of accounts, you're pretty much screwed. And usually when I join a company, the first thing I do is I do a big cleanup of the chart of account. And my cleanup starts from day zero, not day one. Because day one is usually like when the company receives money, when the company is formed. But day zero is like, what is the intention of that company? Why are they like starting this company? And you need to build that chart of account based on the goal and intention of the company. And when you start in a chart of account, like usually like when I come, people are usually on QuickBooks. They don't even have account numbers. And I'm like, oh my God, I cannot live without account numbers. There's no 1,000, 2,000. So the first thing to do is to like go back, look at the chart of accounts, think about what is the business of the company? Mm-hmm. What do they want to do in the long run in 3, 4, 5 years? And map the business across the chart of accounts. Let's say like you're going to have different type of revenues. Usually revenues start with four thousand or something like that, or 40,000. So how many revenue line are you going to have? How many revenue categories are you going to have? So you start there. You start thinking about COGS. What is COGS? Like GAAP, US GAAP is extremely, give you a lot of latitude for COGS. As soon as like if you remain consistent, you can put a lot in COGS or you can put less depending on the goals of the company. So you need to design, what am I going to have in COGS? And what is that map showing to my investors? Because if you have an inflated COGS, that's mean your gross margin, your CP is not going to look good. So you need to understand what are your investors, what are your executives looking for? So that's why the chart of account is extremely important. And you need to design it in partnership with your executive, thinking about what the investors are going to want long term. So after designing that P&L, like I usually do, like, okay, revenue, what type of revenue, what different revenue line, COGS, what do you have there? Like OPEX, like are you going, if you're a SaaS company, you have three big departments, R&D, G&A, sales and marketing. And then you might have other like other revenues like below the line. So I take a detailed approach on the P&L because the P&L tells the story of what's going on during a period in the company. And after you go back to the balance sheet and you're like, okay, what type of asset do I have? What type of liability do I have? And people always forget that, but equity is the most important.
Oh, gosh.
It's funny because I remember when I was at the Big Four, nobody ever taught me how to audit or like account for equity. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn the hard way. And knowing like the different type of equity, because this is what's funding the company and this is where the owners accumulate wealth in the company, or they accumulate losses as well. So you need to understand equity accounting. That's first. And then second, as you are building the accounting for a company, once you have that sort of account, what kind of tools do you have? Because you don't want your team to spend time like doing like silly work. I call that silly work. If a software can do the work, your team shouldn't do it. So I lobby a lot and I invest a lot in the right software so my team doesn't have to do silly work. Like at Ramp, for example, we use Ramp at Ramp for AP, for expense reported. So I don't have to go chase people for the expense reports. And I can tell you, I've done that for like 5-6 years at various companies before that.
Ramp is pretty cool. That's what we use at Ace. We use Ramp. So it does remind you of what's going on, and then it locks you out if you didn't submit your receipt. So my AP associate love it. They're like, yes, for Ramp.
That's good. Same thing for me too. Like I don't have to be chasing people. I can just create quick controls from the get-go. So using the right tools is important. At Ramp, when I started, we're on QuickBooks. I was like, okay, maybe QuickBooks is not the right way to scale. So we went for a bigger software. Okay. Same thing too. We adopted some closed software. We were going to do subscription. Like we implemented, like I implemented like a sales tax software. Because sales tax, oh my God, government, if they want to come after you for sales tax, they will come after you. So you need to make sure you're compliant from the get-go. Like for example, we just implemented like a financial statement preparation software. Because I don't want my team to be doing silly work when that work can be done by software. Or by AI. So right now, my team, like we're thinking about how we can implement AI agent into a monthly close process or into a regular process as well. Because if the tools exist, why are people spending time doing it? I have a really, really lean team for a big organization that's going really fast. And most of the time we are like, I'll say a little bit overwhelmed because there's a lot of work, especially now since we're like in busy season with the audits going on. Like we need to prioritize what type of work that we're doing. That's why it's important to have the right tools. And lastly, like the right processes.
Oh, wow. That's the cherry on the cake. Because sometimes you, like you said, you have the right tools. You did all your work as a leader. You lobbied. You got the approval. You got the software. And then you don't implement right.
Exactly. And I would say this is the most challenging thing. Because you might have the whole nice process on paper with the right controls, with the right owners and everything, and it's still not working.
Yes.
So having the right processes is extremely important. And I'm not going to say I have all the right processes. We're still in building mode. We're still in improvement mode. But your key processes need to be great. And what are the key processes? Like AP. Which is like procure to pay process. AR, your revenue process, which is like order to cash. Yes. Payroll, like those are the key processes. They need to work really well. And after you can work on the other one, like tax, like capitalization and all of this. In addition to that, your close process. That's a process that's always a working process because you're always improving it. But you need to remember to go back to the board and work on your key process. And people don't think about that as well. Like these processes, they don't change. You have them across all organizations. But in the canvas of that, there is the organizational process of doing like improving the processes, automating them, creating the infrastructure. I would call that the backbone of accounting. And that's why accountants, like strategic accounting, is extremely important. Like, I know accounting can be extremely like transactional, but you need to also have a strategic accounting mindset, mm-hmm. which allows you to scale. And by that, I'm like, okay, new product, what is our process for new product? So that's another process that you have to think about. Building the tools, what is the process to build the tool? Like change management, what is the process for that? I would like a world where, as accountants, we have time to do all of this.
Yes.
But most of the time, we just have to prioritize and do what's mostly important, like what's more important.
Of course. But then going back to getting away from silly work. So we, with a lean team, like you said, working at a startup, you probably have a lean team, you're building as you go, you're learning as you go. That's a lot of stretching too. But how do you advocate for the technology to go with it? Because I feel like sometimes we don't always have the right either negotiation skills or the foresight to say, okay, because I know this is where we're going, these are the investments I need to make now with my team. Like, how do you go about making sure that you stay ahead, that the management team knows that they need to make those investments in the accounting and finance team?
This is such a good question, because as accountant, we don't think outside the box. We usually like deal with the cards that we're given. Mm. And we usually make the best of it. But is the best the best? That's the question I keep asking myself. Like, I always ask myself, like, is the best the best? So to advocate, you need to know.
True.
That's knowledge. And right now, we are in a really good period where there's a lot of tools, there's a lot of software, there's a lot of company building for accountants or for Office of the CFO, they call them, like Office mm-hmm. of the CFO tools. So as an accounting leader, it is the your responsibility to know about these new tools that are being developed for accountants. Because if you don't know about them, you cannot introduce them to your team. You cannot advocate for them. So for me, I spend a lot of time with founders. When I say I spend time with them, like, I'm always curious. Like, if I see something new, I will like connect with the founder and request a demo. Because even if I don't use the tool, or even if I have no intention of like ever using it, this is a tool I can learn from. I can recommend it to my friends that might use it. Or I can give like some idea to my team about how to do better work with the mindset of the tool. And if I don't use it now, maybe I'll use it in 2-3 years. You never know. So I spend a lot of time staying up to date with new technology, new tools, startups that are being developed. Because I feel like if you don't do that, you're missing out. So that's one, just like being knowledgeable. And two, how do you convince your leadership? Like, once you find the right tool, how do you convince your leadership? Because think about it, we're just a cost center. Like, people see us a cost center most of the time. We're not like a go-to-market team. So why would someone want to invest in accounting? But they need to do it because we're the foundation. So as an accounting leader, you need to be the one showing the return on investment of the tools you're going to bring. Number one return of investment is time saved.
Wow.
Time saved that your team doesn't have to do like silly work. Every tool that you're assessing, you need to be like, okay, how much time is it saving for my accounting manager? How much time is this saving from a reconciliation process? And once you know that, you can advocate for it. And the time saving can be translated in dollar value as well, because you know how much your team costs you. And as you're thinking about it, you're not thinking about now, you're thinking about the future. So that analysis is like an allocation, like a resource allocation analysis that you have to do. Because as you're doing that, like, usually have 3 or 4 choices. Either you outsource someone else to do work, like an advisor, contractor. Either you buy a tool, or either your team softwares do it.
Or you hire another person.
Yeah, you hire another person. Or you can even build it internally if you have the tools. So that's like 4 choices that you have. With the resources that you have, which is money, like, hopefully you have a budget for it. Mm-hmm. You need to make a decision that's going to affect your present and the future. And again, that decision is based on the return on investment. And I'm caveating that because some people, they might have different mindset. Some people mm-hmm. are like, okay, I want it now mm-hmm. because I have this problem now that I want to solve. And if that's the case, maybe you just buy something. Well, if you buy it, how long is it going to take you to implement it? How long is it going to take you for your team to really know how to use it? But if you hire someone to do it, it's already done. Quick, done. You move on. It depends on the situation. It depends on the prioritization. But again, it's all about like allocation of resources and return of investment. So I use this usually to advocate for the tools that we want. And I do like, usually I do like a really nice presentation with different key things. And I share that with my executive team, management team. And sometimes it's like, they're like, okay, you can get it. It's already in your budget. Go for it. And sometimes they tell me, no, they're like, we'll build this for you. Do you need this now? I have to say that I'm extremely, I like to ask for new things.
So they're used to you.
I don't get everything, but if I make a really strong case, I usually get it.
That is awesome. And I think you having been in the tech, fintech industries, you are very strategic as an accountant. I feel like certain industries make you grow and stretch in different ways that maybe traditional, if I can say, industry don't, because you were in digital currency and then SaaS and all these good stuff. What are some of the things would you say might surprise people when they transition from, let's say, manufacturing to a technology company? Like, what would take you by surprise?
I think for me, the culture is extremely different.
Okay.
And it's interesting because as an auditor, I work with different type of companies. Like I had different type of clients. One day I would be like working for a grocery store. And that was a mom and pop shop. And then the next week, I'll be working in a technology company. Mm-hmm. And then the week after, I'll be working at like pharmaceutical company, like focused on cancer research. So different culture, different mindset. And you need to be able to adapt to that. Because each one of these cultures is focused on something different. They have different goals. But at the basis of that, they're still people. And you'll be surprised. Like we have the same commonalities. We have the same triggers. So as an auditor, I was able to adapt myself to this different environment, different cultures, different personalities, like the controllers that never came to work, that never wanted to give you any audit evidence, that were mean, would. And also the CFO that were like too nice. You're like, oh my God, why is this person so nice? Are they hiding something? So as an auditor, I was able to do that. And that's why I feel like I'm always attracted to new environment. Like I had like challenges, or, like new things. And maybe it's because like I'm an immigrant, like I've lived in different countries and I always feel like I'm resilient enough. I'm adaptable enough to deal with that. But again, it's what do you want? Like I like changes, I like new things, I like exciting things. So when I left PwC as an auditor, like I was an experienced audit manager. I could have stayed for a long time. I had like, I was busy, like traveling all over the US, which was not ideal for like a young mother, but it was good. So when I saw like the cryptocurrency job at Circle, that accounting manager job, I was like, oh my God, this is a chance to learn something new. Like I always want to learn something new. Like I have this curiosity, which I think every accountant's like, we have that. We're curious. We want to know how things are happening. We want to know like what is in payroll, like who's making what. We want to know like why are we paying that much for this. So that curiosity is something that always brings me to different companies, to different industries, and I look for that. So now I'm a little bit like more experienced, and I'm thinking about okay, but what are my career goals, like what is my career map, and I'm more strategic in the type of company that I'm working for. But I still want like exciting company. I went from Circle. Circle was like a cryptocurrency. Nobody knew what Bitcoin was. And it was scary at time. Like, I remember we're like, oh my God, like whenever we would hear like a police siren, like, oh my God, they're coming for us. But I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I learned about compliance. I learned about cryptocurrency. I learned about like how to create new accounting and auditing standards for new class of assets. I learned about like creating entities in different countries and the compliance side of it. So that was great. Mm-hmm. So I was always attracted to new, exciting things. So when I started the job at Circle, it was interesting because it was mostly like a male-dominated environment. with people that were extremely interested in crypto, which I never knew about crypto, but I was able to learn, I was able to trade, and I learned a lot, and that was exciting. Then after Sokol, I was like, okay, what's new? And I went to an AI manufacturing company. That was extremely challenging because inventory, like big inventory, I don't know for you, like I was not a big fan of inventory accounting.
Nobody is.
but it was fun. But again, it was mostly like engineers, and all of them were like electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, and working with them and understanding their work was great. But I realized like it was extremely isolating. So I didn't stay for a long time. And after I was like, okay, what's popping? What's exciting? And at that time, that was social media. And I found this company that was doing like data analytics for social media. That company was Tracker. And I went there. And what they did was like pretty much like tracking influencers across all different social media. So brands, like cosmetic brands, beauty brands, they can message and target customers. So that was fun because I could spend my whole time on Instagram doing work.
Yes.
And I learned a lot about that. And then REM came and I was interested because at that time, like expense reporting was extremely annoying for me. What companies are helping accountants? And I found that. So for me, like you need to have that natural curiosity to explore new things and do new things as an accountant. Like if you want to work for startup, that curiosity should exist. Like you should be curious, should be resilient, you should be adaptable. And I feel like maybe like immigrant background.
Yeah, because you're working outside of your comfort zone. My first language is French. So you, every time you speak, you are automatically outside of your comfort zone. So then it's easier to be outside of your comfort zone because like, yeah, that's my daily life.
Exactly. I'm always outside of my comfort zone. Like I'm in a country that's not mine. Well, it's mine now. I have kids. I have like a spouse, like property. It's mine now. But I work in a language that has become mine. I work in an industry that I have to learn. I work with people that I need to understand. And most of them, I don't see them most of the time. Like we meet like 4 or 5 times per year. As an accountant, if you want to be in a leader in a startup, those are all the skills you have to develop.
Nice, nice. And what would you say would be some good advice for the upcoming generation of accounting and finance leaders? Because they're coming up and there are so many industries available now, many more standards, but also more AI and how it's changing the work that we do. Because we use RAMP, like I said, and I can tell there's a lot of AI in the background because that software is smart. But what does it mean for the next generation of leaders? What do you think? What are some steps they could do to better prepare themselves for what's coming up in the future of finance and accounting?
They need to invest in AI. AI is not going away.
True.
And then we think that AI is going to take our accounting job. That's not true. AI is just going to make our work different. It's going to help it, but it's going to make it more challenging for us to step up, embrace it. And I can say, like, I was at Bentley College a couple of weeks ago for a case competition. And I talked to these students, like second, third, fourth year students in accounting. And they're learning like SQL. They're learning Power DB. They're already using AI. So they understand that. And they're teaching them that. And AI is here to do the silly work. You can create AI agent to do silly work. Like same thing, like you can have a calculator. You can have formulas in Microsoft Excel. So when these tools were introduced, I'm sure people were like concerned, oh my God, it's going to take my work. But they just improved the work. And the same thing too for AI. AI is going to improve the work. So now, as the new generation of accountants, you need to know what am I going to do? Because let's say if I wanted to be a bookkeeper, guess what? We probably not going to need bookkeeper anymore.
That's very true.
If you were going to be like an AP clerk, you are like, oh, I'm going to be the best AP clerk ever. Well, your job is not going to be entering invoices anymore, categorizing them. There are tools that can do that. REMP can do that for you. So as an AP clerk, your job is to give insight now. Your job is to make sure that the controls, the approval flow works and the settings work. Your job is to navigate relationship with partners across different departments and tell them, well, your budget is not working. So I feel like AI is going to elevate our work and make us like more useful rather than just doing silly work, rather than just doing like a task oriented. We're going to be more strategic. And that's what we have to learn. Like learn how to ask the question, like what, why, so what. Learn how to dig deeper and focus and tell the story that the numbers are telling you. Because the AI will tell you the numbers. So what is that story behind that number? And for me, even for me, it's hard because I remember when I was studying with accounting, like my first audit job, I came to a room that was the audit room. That was a conference room close to the kitchen, of course.
Yes, the one nobody wants to be in.
It was really hot. And then they just gave us all these big binders. And my first job was like to go to the binders and pick sample and post it everywhere. Guess what? I don't even have paper at rep anymore. My team is small. Nice. There's no binders, there's no papers. When the auditors come, we just like send them a file electronically. So that's already a big change, right? Same thing for AI. Like at some point, I won't even have to do like a VLOOKUP, Excel, like formatting. AI will do it. AI will tell the story. So I'll be the one like presenting that story, doing the research and giving the insight.
Becoming a better business partner.
Exactly. So that technology is helping us be the best accountants, be the best collaborators, and helping the business scale. And again, like I want to like go back to the three goals of accounting. Keep the lights on. This can be automated. Report the assets. Part of it can be automated, but as a accounting leader, as accounting manager, you'll have your role to play because you will know what the important assets are. And third is give information. So AI is going to help you compile information, organize it, but you will still have to tell that story. You still have to format it. You still have to like dig deeper and tell the stories that are important to people.
Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much, Edwin. This was so insightful. Thank you so much because, again, you brought back the idea of accounting being such a backbone of any finance, of any really business organization. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun. Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode of The Diary of a CFO. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, and share with others. Our website is thediaryofacfo.com. That's where you can find all the episodes, access all the guest profiles, see their bios, and their social media links. It is also the place where you can apply to be a guest on the podcast and have information about how you can sponsor the show. As always, if there is any topic you would like me to cover in the future, just email me at ask@thediaryofacfo.com. Again, the email is ask@thediaryofacfo.com. See you soon.